Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Scrappy Startups. I'm your host, Bill Rue. In today's episode, we're going to meet Stacy Townsend. She's the founder of Common Form out of Bozeman, Montana. You know, not every startup has to be a tech startup. And in today's show, we're going to highlight a fantastic manufacturer and retailer of custom jewelry. Stacy has a vision for products that are inspiring, unique, that can be worn both every day or for special events. Her story is the epitome of a scrappy startup. Now, what I found very compelling is that her lessons apply whether you're creating a Gen AI startup all the way to designing and manufacturing in the fashion industry. In my discussions with her, I was intrigued by how she decided on innovating in jewelry, the importance of self-financing in most startups, how fate can smile on you to help drive success, and the importance of leadership and people. In this podcast, we celebrate and learn from startups that are early in their journey. I truly believe the lessons learned are real and actionable. Questions like, how do people find their passion? What challenges do they face? What skills do they need to develop? Also, we're going to hear a little bit more about my hometown, Bozeman, Montana, a scrappy startup town. Before we begin, I want to thank our sponsors, which are both scrappy startups. First, Jugi, a social e-commerce startup where you can earn points and bid on fantastic products and services. From jewelry out of Common Form to real estate, it is not your typical boring e-commerce experience. Also, Last Best Place Brewing in Bozeman, Montana. If you're in town, stop by for one of their craft beers or ask for them at restaurants, bars, and grocery stores in Montana. So with that said, let's now turn to Stacy Townsend and Common Form. And so let's just jump right in. And Stacy, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got to Bozeman, and let's learn a little bit about you.
Sure. Well, I grew up in Washington State on the east side of the Cascades, so the dry side. Met my husband there just as I was graduating from college. And that was in 2008, which if you remember what was going on economically, it was a very interesting time to be launched into the world with big dreams. So yeah, things were kind of not really as we planned. We hung out there in my college town for quite a while. We really liked it there. And then bumped into a professor of mine. I studied graphic design, and he was still really optimistic. He had roots in New York, and he was like, if you want to design competitively, you should go to the city. So we had big plans of going to New York, and we went and we tried it out and we loved it. Decided to send it and just go. And then fate would have it, there was a little kerfuffle, and we ended up not having the apartment deal that we needed to kind of swing that adventure. And he had grown up in Bozeman. So he was born in California in the South Santa Rosa area, but spent his whole life here in Bozeman. And out of high school and through college, he worked at this guest ranch in Paradise Valley. And I mean, it is what you would imagine. I think some of us of a certain generation grew up on Hey Dude and understand the dude ranching industry. And it is that, but it is a very elevated version of that. So we really came out here, just not really knowing what we wanted to do. And we knew that we could get work for a summer. And then I ended up spending 5 years there. He spent 19 years there, all told. So we kind of fell in love with that place. And then by way of being here and spending time in Paradise Valley and then having his mom lives here in Bozeman, I just was like, wow, your hometown checks all the boxes. It has all the things that we are looking for in the place that we want to settle. What if we just settled here? And so that kind of was the beginning of it. And now it just feels it's our place. You know, people ask us where we want to go next or if we think about moving. And we really don't. We just don't even consider it. Even the way, you know, Bozeman's evolving quite a lot these days and has changed a lot in the last 5 years. But influx of a lot of good along with all of the kind of just the big changes that we're not used to.
Well, that's quite a story. And the difference between being in New York to being in Bozeman, I mean, you couldn't get two polar opposites. It's quite interesting how that worked out. And but I guess the question is, do you think you would have been an entrepreneur whether you were in Bozeman or not?
That's such a good question. You know, I've leading up to this podcast, I've been thinking a lot about kind of where my entrepreneur spirit came from. And I never really considered it. It's not like, you know, I think some people, as you're going through school, you might, you know, you're considering your career path and what kind of industry you want to get into. And I think that like the entrepreneur spirit is just deep in me. So that feels like a hard question to answer because I don't know what life in New York would have been like. And I think there's something really magical. I haven't been an entrepreneur anywhere else, but the Bozeman community is, this is a really special place to start a business, to own a business. I mean, the community just rallies around anyone with an idea. So I think this is the best place to be an entrepreneur, but I don't have a lot of background to say if it is or not.
Did you just wake up one day and said, hey, I'm gonna start Common Form? Or did you try a bunch of things? How did you get to creating this pretty cool company?
Yeah, this company actually, it feels like it just birthed itself in a way. It's a jewelry line. And so it started from, I took a couple metalsmithing classes in college. At that time, I literally gave my entire metalsmithing kit to a student that was coming in because it's like really expensive equipment, expensive metals. And as I had finished these two courses, I was like, gosh, there's no way, life as a silversmith, I just don't understand how, and it takes you so many hours to make something, how that could actually be a way to make an income. So I right out the gate was like, being a jeweler is not my destiny. But then I started making, fast forward many years later, then we're at this guest ranch and I start making jewelry, just assembly, just buying some parts on Etsy and finding natural materials and starting to kind of combine things and make various earrings and necklaces for myself. And then I had friends that were like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. Where did you get it? And then upon discovering that I made it, offering to make them one. And then you start making things for friends of friends. And then you start making things for people who you've never met. And so I remember building a website for it just out of necessity, just to make it possible to be retailing things to people who I didn't have a direct connection with. It wasn't really like, I want to have this big jewelry company. There just was a little bit of a demand there. And so I leaned into it. And then, all the while when I left the ranch, I cut my teeth as a photographer when I was at the ranch. They did kind of, they have these really amazing like week-long stays. It was my job to document that experience and then deliver it at the end of the week and then, kind of facilitate people getting the photos of their experience. And so when I left the ranch, I was like, oh, photography is my marketable skill. And so I kind of entered into the freelance world in Bozeman before being in kind of the startup or traditional business ownership. And with photography, I leaned into what I studied in college, which is graphic design. So I was serving clients, an incredible nonprofit community here. So I served a lot of nonprofits with photography and design. I've built a lot of websites. And so really that was my personal focus, was this design and photography business all these years. And it was definitely kind of, that was like the financial stability. I knew I could trade dollars for hours and kind of support myself in that way. Meanwhile, Common Form's over here just kind of like gaining traction, getting a little bit bigger. And then really the tipping point for us, so I started making jewelry in 2012. So it's been quite a while, really kind of a slow burn. And then really the tipping point for us was the show Yellowstone in season 5, episode 3. One of our really recognizable pieces was worn by the main female character in a really bold scene. And that really, it just changed everything. We went from maybe getting 5 orders a month, maybe 10 was like a good month, to getting, we were getting 30, 40 orders a day when that episode aired. And so then we were in response mode, right? We were like, oh my gosh, okay, we want to capitalize on this, but also we want to do it in a really healthy way. And so all the while I was kind of thinking about, we have all these eyes on us right now. How do we make sure that everything else is like healthy and stable and that we have other pieces that are related to that and complement that, that if somebody's looking for that piece, they might then shop the rest of the line. So yeah, that was really, that feels like when the journey kind of properly began.
That's an awesome journey. And it's funny how something we just took for fun in college, it sounds like, you take this class thinking, oh, it's an interesting class, and it turns into your future, although your design background obviously plays really nice into this. So why don't you tell us about Common Form? Where did the name come from? And what is the focus for you in the business?
Yeah. So Common Form, the jewelry I was originally selling under the name of my design business is Townsend Collective. I had this vision of working with my husband. We were working together at the ranch and I was like, okay, I'm leaving. You should leave too. So I started this company, Townsend Collective, which is where the jewelry is originally sold. And then it just became clear that it needed it needed a home of its own. It needed a brand of its own. It didn't make sense if people were coming for my design services that the jewelry was getting in the way and vice versa. So when we decided to name it, oh my gosh, I still have this insane, I mean, you've named companies, right? It's such a journey. It takes a really long time. It's really emotional. You know, so I spent a lot of time just kind of looking around at the structure of different company names. But really what I wanted, one of our pillars is accessibility. We try to keep everything like at or around $100 or less. So a lot of our earrings are, you know, $40, $50. And that's, it, you know, it's not an accident. And we're, you know, we're designing to kind of keep things in that range. So part of what I wanted to capture in the name is that it's, you know, that it is kind of accessible. We're also using, you know, really, it's simple, but elegant. So it's like these really everyday shapes, a lot of like circles, half circles, a lot of kind of organic shapes. So I loved playing with the concept of form, you know, what is the form? What is the shape? What does it actually look like? And also that it's like, and every day we want you wearing this jewelry all the time. We want you living in it. It can be a special occasion piece, but really it's designed to wear to work every other day. So that was kind of the impetus. It doesn't have like a very specific tie, but it was really kind of the essence of the name that we were looking for.
Well, yeah, it's really exciting. So, you know, tell me about, Yellow Sun. Did they all just show up at your shop? Did they show up at your house? Did they call you? Did they just buy it? I mean, how did all that occur?
Yeah, that's a good question. It was a total surprise to us. I had reason to have an idea that something was brewing. So the actress, Kelly Riley, who plays Beth Dutton, who's the character that wore this jewelry of ours, which it's a porcupine quill in a 22 casing hanging on a hoop. So it's a pretty bold, it's the first piece I designed. It was in the line forever. It was not one of our bestsellers, you know, but I have friends who've had this piece for a really long time, just by the nature of it being in the line. But I would have said, you know, 5 years ago that this piece isn't for everyone. It's like a really bold earring. It's an animal part, you know, a porcupine quill. They're shed naturally, so no porcupines are harmed. But it's a really interesting piece. And so what happened is the summer before this episode, I got an order that came through our website that looked like a wholesale order. You know, they ordered in multiples. So it was three of this and three of this and three of this, but they paid full price. And I was like, oh, this wholesale, whoever owns this shop forgot to put in their wholesale code to get it at wholesale price. So I just did a quick Google to figure out what store they owned. And I Google Kelly Riley and I'm like, oh, this person doesn't own a store. They're an actress. How amazing. That's really cool. My husband and I weren't fans of the show at the time. We are now, for obvious reasons, not just because it's a wild show, but because of the ways it's really impacted our lives. But yeah, so I realized that she had purchased them. I thought maybe she got some for herself and some girlfriends while in Montana, and just recognized the brand as a local brand. And so I was hoping really to see her in the earrings, like on the street. You know, so on occasion, I would look her up and just see if there was any photos of her wearing them, because I thought that would be just the most amazing thing. And then my husband, he has this friend in LA who's really obsessed with the show. And have you seen it, Yellowstone?
It's one of my favorite. I've bought all the episodes.
Good. Yeah. So, you know, it's like, it's a really dramatic show. The way it depicts this region is both real and not real at all.
Right.
And so my husband has this friend in LA who's like, oh my gosh, like, I just saw this in the show. Is that really going on? Like, what's this like? Is it really like that? And he's always like, no. It is, but it isn't. You can't like ride your horse from Paradise Valley to Montana. Like, technically, actually, you could, but people are not doing that. Anyway, so he sees me. We're like standing in line at Target and I'm scrolling, looking for a photo of Kelly Riley, just because I'm like bored waiting to check out. And then we get home that night and realize that he had subscribed to this platform to watch sports on, and he realizes that Yellowstone's available. And so we just drop in. He's like, we should watch an episode of this and just see what it feels like, see what it's all about. And he literally clicks into season 5, episode 3, the episode that she's wearing the earrings. And it's like 2 minutes in, maybe. And it shows her putting the earrings in as she's talking to her dad at the house. And I'm like, you knew. Did you know? You know, so we have this really trippy moment sitting on the couch being like, is this really happening? She ordered them. Those are our earrings. That's so crazy. And then, yeah, from there, it was just the wildness of, you know, getting texts from friends that watched the show that were like, oh my gosh, these have to be your earrings. I can't believe you got them in the show. Which Like, I don't feel like I got them in the show. They just, Kelly Riley did it all. And then, yeah, the whirlwind of orders and learning about, one thing that we learned about that's really interesting for anyone who's listening, who's in the retail world, there are these third-party websites. So what facilitated people figuring out when watching the show, then you Google like season 5, episode 3, what earrings is character Beth Dutton wearing? And there's these third-party websites where people are identifying the clothing that the actors and actresses are wearing. And so most of our orders were, we were watching where they were coming from, and they were coming from all of these third-party sites where somebody was like, oh, the blouse she's wearing in this scene is, you know, Banana Republic, and the earrings she's wearing are Common Form. And then people were pointing to our website for people to buy them. And this is,
that's awesome.
You know, I knew nothing about how all that worked. We've learned it all just through the process.
Yeah, I do want to call out and give a shout out to the folks who put on Yellowstone, their show Madison. I can tell you right now, they really do support local economy, local stores, and it's quite wonderful. You don't always see that, but those guys, off the charts, great. So, you know, what's a day in the life for you at Common Form? What do you spend time on that you go, I didn't think I was going to spend as much time on that? And what do you spend time on that you go, I really get rewarded by doing this?
Yeah. Well, you're catching me at a really interesting time because I'm transitioning from, you know, I'm kind of in the process of dissolving the design and photography business, or at least going on a hiatus. And so right now for me, it's feeling really cool. I'm getting to just drop into a really healthy business. I have a really amazing team with some folks that have been with me for years. Jess, who's my general manager, has been with me for 6 years. And so really, it's really fun to get to drop in where there's not like a super strong need for me, right? So I'm like really right now just wanting to be really careful about how the team already works and make sure that I'm not getting in their way. But it's a really fun opportunity to kind of like drop in and just look around and see who's good at what, who's getting to do. Like, I feel more focused on what they're doing than what I'm doing, which I think means that I'm dropping into a leadership role, right? Where I want to kind of like go through the team, touch base with everyone, figure out what parts of their job they really like, what parts of their job they don't like. And even in our hiring process, we talk about this a lot, where it's like, there's so much to do in this company, all the things need to get done. And nobody's coming to an interview being like, I love sweeping the floors and taking out the trash. So there's some stuff that just has to get done, but also it's an opportunity for, you know, for people to learn, for people to get to do things that they really like. And I always tell them, if you're in the middle of a process and you're really not liking it, it's feeling really hard, you're not feeling efficient, you can ripcord out of it. Like, if you want to ask for help and dig in and figure out if somebody on the team has a hack for it, like, reach out and we will support you in figuring it out. If you just don't want to do it, you kind of don't have to do it. Like, there's somebody else on the team that probably enjoys it. So let's see if we can build these roles in a way where people are really doing probably the things that they enjoy for sure. And the things that the overlap between what you enjoy and are good at is pretty high.
You know, that's quite mature in that you have these leadership skills that you go to big companies and that's what they talk about, is how you interact with your employees, how you motivate them, how you get them to be a team, a high performance team. And you did all that. You know, and you're doing that today. Were you born knowing this, or did you learn it at college, or is that something you picked up? And kind of what were some of the key learnings? Like, in the beginning, you said, okay, I got to get better at this. Oh, I got to learn that. What were some of those key learnings? And leadership's one of them. I'd like you to start there.
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say that that skill set is in development as we speak and has just built along the way. You know, it's like I've worked in a lot of small businesses, I've worked in big businesses. And I think, you know, working in these various roles in various industries and hospitality, I spent a little bit of time in the cell phone industry, you know, I've worked at small coffee shops. And I think that I always just was just really, more than my colleagues, I was really focused on how productive it is for somebody to be in a lane that they're happy in or that they like being in, and how not productive it is for the company for them to be like pushing it and doing something that they don't like. It's just always been really interesting to me. And then I think working at the ranch was the most informative time, just because it was such an intimate working experience. You know, it's like you live on site, there's roughly 100 employees. I spent a lot of years in kind of what you would consider middle management. So I was the head of reservations and was kind of, I was really the conduit between the guests at the ranch and the managers that were managing various departments. You know, so somebody would come to me to say, hey, I really like having 20 extra hangers in my cabin. And then it was my role to go to the housekeeping department and have those hangers in the cabin before the guests walked back to their cabin, right? It's like, okay, this person is now going for a mimosa, go beat them to their cabin. And so I just loved that kind of challenge. And then, and I think in being that kind of work, just saw where various people in various roles were working really well and where skills were getting overlooked, where it's like, oh, this person is really good at interfacing with the guests, but they have a job that doesn't let them interface with the guests. What if we restructured that a little bit? So yeah, I think in starting my own company, I was like, I've just always felt like your people are your greatest asset. And I just want them to be happy. And that if that's being happy working here, then let's do everything in our power to have them, you know, be happy and working at their full productivity or not. You know, it's like if they want to move on to something else, I'm in full support of that too. But yeah, I think a healthy company has healthy people in it.
So, you know, what advice do you wish someone had told you earlier that you had to learn in really making Common Form a success?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it would be surrounding yourself with people who are also entrepreneurs or are invested in supporting you in some way. You know, I have a lot of friends that have other companies here in Bozeman. You know, my good girlfriend Natalie owns Treeline Coffee Roasters, and they were also recently featured in Yellowstone. And it's been, she was a design client of mine, but we were just at lunch last week talking, you know, accounting systems. And I'm like, how do you have your people clock in and out? And how is that related to how you're running your payroll and what's automated? What's not? What do you like about it? And being able to like sit down with somebody who you know and trust and ask them about the inner workings of their business is just so incredibly valuable.
Treeline Coffee is great. You got to check it out. I don't have to tell anybody because the websites all tell you that. You know, I think this, how do you keep your people? The growth in this town is tremendous. Trying to hire is difficult.
Yep.
But trying to keep people and trying to motivate them, what do you think has made you successful? Because quite honestly, you sound like you've got a great team. They like being there. They're motivated. But how do you keep them? Or do you find that hard in a town like Bozeman?
That's a good question. I would say it has felt easier to me than I was expecting. I mean, we give them free Treeline coffee. We have a little trade deal with them because they sell our jewelry. But yeah, we have an espresso machine in the office. You know, we're such a small company, we don't offer benefits. So we hire really young, not intentionally, but it's like, you know, we often when we're hiring, we lean on our team first. So it's like, okay, we need to fill two positions for the summer. Who do you guys know? Who do you know and trust? And when you lean on your team, it's like they're only going to recommend people that they want to work with, that they really do trust. So we've had really, really good luck with that. Just my general manager and I joke all the time that we've hired our entire friend group. People do leave Bozeman, so people have left. But yeah, we found some really amazing people. And I think that I feel really lucky that so much of the structure of Common Form, you know, Jess has a big job in, you know, she's a leadership role. She's keeping all of our inventory, you know, dialed and managed. She's also making sure that we have all of the parts that we need for the manufacturing. So she has a really big job, but for the most part, and this felt true at the ranch. I would say this is something a concept that I adopted from working there, which is that you hire a good person and you can train the rest. And I think that's true in some businesses and it's not true in other businesses. I think it might be harder in tech where it requires a certain skill set. But for us, you know, the people that we have metalsmithing had never touched a torch before.
Really?
Yeah. So we just sit them down and it's like, you can learn metalsmithing as long as we have the capacity to slow down and teach and be really thoughtful through our quality control process and really kind of check in with them about how it's feeling as they're learning. It all feels teachable to me.
Do you feel like you're a good teacher? Or did you learn that skill or did that come naturally? And how important is that to what you do?
Yeah, that's a good question. You'd have to ask my team. If I'm a good teacher, I hope so. I mean, it feels like we've been successful in teaching people. So if that's a marker, you know, we've brought people on that didn't know how to metalsmith, and now they're master metalsmiths, as far as I'm concerned, for what we need in our business. And I think really, I just have always been in support. I'm a very curious person, and I admire curiosity in others. And so I really think that all you need to learn something is the desire to learn it. And so that's something that we talk through in our hiring process too, where it's like, you have to want to learn about what we're doing, and you have to want to learn how to make the individual pieces as well. And so that's really kind of one of the main things that we're filtering out for is, do you want to jump on a team and do a hard thing? And there's a lot of self-teaching that happens too. You know, it's like people are making things near you. We really encourage people to kind of cross-train. So it's to like ask a peer how they do a thing instead of asking Jess or I. Like, we'll formally train them our process, but somebody else might have a way of doing it. Just by the way of the ergonomics of making a thing, they might have a faster way or a different way that works better for a different brain.
So what are the biggest challenges you've kind of recently faced or you're facing going forward in your business? How are you handling those?
Yeah, we're in the thick of a big one, actually. I really want to move into gold. We make all of our jewelry is brass based. I've always joked that it's kind of like the poor gal's gold. And brass is interesting. It's really wearable for some, and it's really not wearable. It basically reacts to your body's pH. So when you've probably heard about, like, you wear jewelry and it turns your finger green or it turns your finger black. And so that's just the reaction to the metal. Some people have a really poor reaction. Some people don't react at all. And so I feel like we've really, you know, to keep the price point low, we leaned into this kind of affordable metal. And now we have a pretty significant customer base that wants more. And they want to be able to sleep in their jewelry. They want to be able to go in the hot springs in their jewelry. They want to be able to really wear it. And we want that too, right? It's like, we want you to live your life. We want you to like climb a mountain in your common form earrings. Which sounds funny, but living in Bozeman, I'm sure you understand that it's like everyday people are doing these really, really amazing things. And so we're really trying to crack the code of how to get into gold plate, gold fill. So we're starting to integrate that. We have a setup upstairs that we launched our a bridal line recently with a friend of mine, Jasmine Snyder. She owns Jasmine Lily Bridal, and she's a longtime friend of mine. And she was like, why haven't we ever worked together? Let's build a thing. Let's launch a thing. So we have this little sub brand. And so that really forced us to kind of figure it out. So we have this machine on site, the whole setup. It's like a very like little sciencey corner of our studio. But we basically taught ourselves how to gold plate. The funny thing about me and my personality is that there's a certain way to do it with gold, to get from brass to gold. And to completely trap the brass particles, you go from brass to nickel, and then you plate it with copper, and then you plate it with gold. And I kind of can't get through, like, gold is gold colored and brass is gold colored. I really want to be able to just put gold over brass. But then these brass particles over time come through. So I would love to be talking about this in hindsight and tell you how we figured it out. But we're just really in the thick of it at the moment, trying to figure out if we can. It feels like there's kind of two different pathways. There's either I'm going to get pushed into doing it a way that I don't want to do it that introduces these other colors of metals, or we're going to need to just do a little bit of customer education to say, we're offering gold plating, but it's a different way of doing it. And it is a protective barrier, but it's not going to wear like a traditional gold piece.
That's awesome. Stacy, this has been fantastic. I think people get a lot out of this in terms of what does it really take to go about on your journey to be an entrepreneur. So thank you so much. Really appreciate you being a guest and look forward to buying more jewelry from you. I hope you enjoyed our discussion with Stacy as much as I enjoyed doing the interview. Now, she's a very inspiring entrepreneur. I hope you'll check out her jewelry store online or in the Cannery District in Bozeman. Now, she shared some fantastic lessons learned from her journey. And I want to start with a lesson that's often overlooked: the importance of fate or luck or whatever you want to call it in creating a successful startup. Now, that was an incredible discussion about how the show Yellowstone played such an important part in her journey. There is an old saying in business: luck is when preparation meets opportunity. Be on the lookout for those moments of luck. Grab a hold of them and use that to help propel your business forward. Now, I think the second key lesson learned may be a bit surprising: the importance of leadership and people skills, no matter if you have one employee or 1,000 employees. As she pointed out, people are the business. You need to be great at hiring good people. Every business is a people-based business. Your ability to attract talent and keep that talent is critical to success. How do you inspire people? How do you bring them together as a team? How do you get them to interact and create great products? Now, be self-aware enough to challenge yourself to grow your leadership skills. I think the last interesting lesson is aimed at those entrepreneurs who haven't yet found their startup opportunity. Look, inspiration could come from everywhere. However, my own observation is that the most successful entrepreneurs have had some personal experience in either solving a problem they faced or in following a passion skill they developed. In Stacy's case, it all came down to she took a class that created inspiration for her later in life. With that said, I hope you enjoyed today's episode, and I look forward to connecting with you on the next episode of Scrappy Startups. And finally, again, I want to conclude with thanking my sponsors, Joogi, J-O-O-G-I. You can find them on the Apple or the Google App Store. Download the app and get a unique social e-commerce experience, as well as Last Best Place Brewing out of Bozeman, Montana, a true Montana-based craft beer. If you're in town, stop by, grab a pint, or ask them for them at restaurants, bars, grocery stores throughout Montana. Thank you for all your time and attention. This is Bill Roo signing off. Good luck with your scrappy startup.